Hello, everybody. This is Jazza from The Right Dishonourable here. You may notice that in this introduction, Jimmy isn't present. So I can actually say whatever I want about him. I won't, though. I'm a decent human being. Basically, we've had some technical difficulties. We've lost half of the episode that we just recorded over the weekend. So I'm going to have to introduce it on my own. We had a wonderful guest in the form of Lewis Parker, who is a YouTuber extraordinaire. And he came to Right Dishonourable HQ and talked to us about the Labour leadership contest. Yes, we're talking about that again. Basically, we just had a lovely, lovely time. I'm taking the mickey out of Lewis, as he is a paid-up member of the Labour Party who voted for Liz Kendall. So that should be a lot of fun to listen to. And then, secondly, and unfortunately, finally, because of corrupted files and the like, we talked about the Freedom to Donate campaign, which Lewis is heading up as the media and PR person for that campaign, which is asking for members of Parliament to reconsider the ban on giving blood for sexually active gay men, as well as for people who work in the sex industry and people who have used intravenous drugs in the past. Enjoy this episode. Give us some love on Twitter. You can find us at Right Dishonour, or you can be annoyed at the comments and the way that we treated Lewis on the website if you want to leave us a comment on there, rightdishonourable.com. Enjoy this episode. Yeah. So finally, the Labour leadership election is upon us, and we're getting ready to crown Jeremy Corbyn as the new leader of the main opposition in the United Kingdom Parliament in Westminster. Lewis
is making a lot of faces at this point.
It's not something which particularly excites me.
So, Lewis, you're a paid-up member of the Labour Party, and you voted.
Yes.
And you actually got lost on your way to the Tories and voted for Liz Kendall, didn't you?
Oh, Jazza, yeah. this is going off to a good start, isn't it? Yes, I voted for Liz Kendall, and I'm proud of that.
That's absolutely fine. Why did you vote for her? I'm pulling your leg. I'm being a dick.
The reason why I voted for Liz Kendall is because I genuinely believe that she is the person who the Labour Party needs, who can take us to victory in 2020, and who can change the country compared to Jeremy Corbyn, who will simply be talking to a crowd and there'll be no policy which comes from it.
But isn't the main thing about having an opposition the fact that they are able to offer an alternative, right? Isn't Liz Kendall
The thing about an opposition, you've got to offer an opposition, but you've also got to be a credible opposition. And the fact of the matter is, Jeremy Corbyn is not that. I mean, he wants to withdraw from NATO, his stance on it.
I think he's changed his stance on that now.
He's evolved.
He has evolved on that issue.
So there you go, you see, once they think they're going to get a little bit of power, they change their minds just like the rest of them, don't they? But there we go.
So
doesn't that invalidate your criticism of him, though? You say he's going to, like, lurch to the left, but then you also just said
that was more of just a joking statement. I would tread back on my words.
So what are you going to do? So you joined recently after the election.
Yes, I've always been Labour, but I only recently joined the party.
So what are you going to do after this election, where Jeremy Corbyn is probably going to win?
Probably, yes.
Are you going to stick with the party?
Yes, of course. I do think it's a bit more open than a lot of the media suggests.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, there's certainly a good.
you're optimistic.
That is optimistic. We know that Kendall won't win.
We know that Kendall won't win. I think that's quite a given statement. But the fact is that if he doesn't win it on first preferences, which obviously we know the system of voting which Labour has, then I think there's a good chance that he won. Possibly Yvette could get it on second or third.
Shouldn't you have voted for Yvette then?
No, because the reason in which the voting system works is that...
Thank you for telling me, because I don't understand it, really.
So, you've got your...
In the Lib Dems, we only had two.
So you've got your preference settings system. Mm-hmm. So essentially, Corbyn at the moment looks like he's going to get more than 50% in the first round. Mm-hmm. So this method of voting basically works where whoever gets over 50% will win and they'll become a leader.
Yeah.
So you've got your first, your second, your third preference. So basically, anybody but Corbyn for me is I'm quite
anyone
happy with.
But Corbyn.
Yeah. So because
so what? How do you feel about the fact that he's going to be your leader then? How are you going to? I don't know, Troy. Are you going to back any ginger group within the Labour Party that could oppose him? Or so would you be calling for him to step down as soon as he becomes leader?
So are you thinking more about Tristram's and Chuckers group, Labour for the Common Good? Are you thinking of that?
We prefer to refer to them as the Resistance, which
That's complete. That's false. Is that whatsoever?
Lewis, can I just say, I'm really enjoying annoying you.
They are not the Resistance whatsoever. They're backed by MPs who have backed all candidates, and in fact earlier this week I believe that Chucker said that he would work and he hasn't yet ruled out that he would actually join the shadow cabinet. So it's not a resistance group, it's just Labour Party members, MPs obviously, discussing what they think the best way forward is.
I mean that is a very generous interpretation. If we were talking about the awkward squad in the Tory party who want to cause trouble in the Euro, we'd say that there's a definite schism there. So the possibility of schism in the Labour Party is at least as good as that.
It's just another discussion group, essentially. So it's not going to be a resistance. We're going to be sort of, especially Corbyn supporters like to call them, the Blairites versus the Trotskyists. So.
Do you think that it's been fair that a candidate like Liz Kendall has been labelled a Blairite? And you think that that has just damaged her from the offset?
I think it's absolutely disgusting that she's been, if you ask me. Branded a red Tory. Not necessarily a Blairite. I'm like, I don't think there's necessarily certain things wrong with being a Blairite.
Mm-hmm.
Though I think that the way the media, the way a lot of Corbyn supporters have sort of labelled her as a red Tory, I think that is disgusting. If you look at her record, you look at her belief system, she's fought against the Tories all of her life. She obviously was only elected in 2010.
Does share a lot of similar stances with the Conservatives, though,
doesn't
she? But
then you can say that what happened between 1997 and 2010 is that the Labour Party dragged the Conservatives more to the centre.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to admit that some of the Conservatives' policies are sensible, which is why you've got the
shock horror.
You have the whole controversial issue with the welfare bill,
mm-hmm.
and the fact why you've got issues like that. And I think it was right the way that the Labour Party handled that situation.
If some of the Tories' parties are sensible, what's wrong with being labelled a red Tory?
What's wrong with being a red Tory because of the negative connotations attached to that? And so you could, for instance, people in the Tory party can agree with Labour from time to time. It doesn't mean you're agreeing with the entire, because if you're being labelled as a red Tory, mm-hmm. then essentially people think, oh well, she's just an infiltrator, a Tory in disguise.
But you were saying that, we'll talk about infiltrators later.
Yes.
But if you're saying that there's lots of Tory policies that are sensible,
not lots of them,
there's a few that are sensible that somebody like Liz Kendall and that wing of the party would be very happy to support.
But she's more vocal about being against the Tories.
If you're agreeing with a lot of Tory stuff, why not join the Tories in power and pull them more to the centre?
She's not agreeing with a lot of Tory stuff. She's agreed with a few things which the Tories have said, which a lot of people, which the country agrees upon. At the end of the day, if you look where when we're at the election, the country voted for the Conservatives,
mm-hmm.
and they're in power. They've got a majority, not much at that, but they've mm-hmm. still got a majority. And the country isn't this far left sort of idea which Jeremy Corbyn has, and which the media sort of portrayed is that Jeremy Corbyn's got the support of the entire country. That's mm-hmm. completely wrong.
That's just not true. I mean, if you talk about like slurs against Kendall and you can compare them to the slurs against Corbyn, mm-hmm. the two don't compare. The media was way more generous to Kendall than it is to Corbyn.
I disagree with you on that.
That is just untrue. The briefest survey of the Telegraph, the FT,
Kendall,
the Times,
Kendall
the
has
Guardian.
Faced more criticism than Corbyn has. So.
I'm also,
Kendall has been far worse than on Corbyn. A lot of the attacks against Corbyn have been rightly so. Some of the stuff which he's done is.
Oh, so you, yeah,
but he's
you
been called like
the
a Trotsky
against Corbyn, so they're okay.
No, I agree. I agree with something being held held to account, so...
Ah, okay.
But no, I think I agree with Jimmy in that I think that the criticisms of Corbyn have been very reactionary and unfair. You have to, and he was deliberately brought into the race, and a lot of people are regressing that now,
yes, they are.
To give more of a wide spectrum of views. Mm-hmm. And because of the way that the Labour Party has decided to conduct this election, it's meant that a lot of people have joined so that they can pull Labour more to the left, because they don't feel represented by any of the other mainstream parties.
Don't you
think that that is a good thing, that people who have felt disaffected by politics are now being included in one of the, in the second largest party in the country?
I always think it's a good thing for people to be to feel included and to get engaged in politics. As you know, Jazza,
as we were by the ballot
together.
Yeah, yeah.
However, I think there's a difference between people being engaged in politics and people infiltrating a party to drag it to the left.
So do you think that people have been infiltrating it, or did they just see a chance to influence a party that would then be able to have influence as a really credible opposition, and an opposition that had something to say about the, like, all of the negative things that the Tory party perceived as doing?
Yes, I do believe that a lot of people did join to infiltrate the party. Lots of them as well being Tories themselves, in fact. We have a mutual friend of ours who's a Tory and voted for Corbyn for the exact same reason. And you've also...
I mean, but the joke's on him, though, because there's more legitimate people who want the Labour Party to actually represent their views than there are evil infiltrators, though, aren't there?
There's a fair share, but I mean, the fact of the matter, the parties which a lot of these are coming from, the Greens, the SDP, a lot of, you know, people like that, and, you know, they don't agree to the actual idea, the ideology of the Labour Party. Therefore, they're voting for a candidate, but when you sign up to be a supporter or as a member, you've got to agree with the actual foundations of the Labour Party.
Surely, if the people who support the Labour Party shifts and the party shifts over time, that's quite a natural thing in all parties, and it just means that Labour is now a different party from what it was before the general election.
But you see, I disagree on that, because a lot of these people who have joined, they've joined now, and a lot of them have
you the listeners aren't going to see this, but you said that with the most begrudging look on your face, like, fair enough, they've joined now.
Yes, I can imagine. but the fact is that, yes, as you just said, and not only does a party changes, a country changes. You know, we've had the Liberals, we've had Conservative, we've had Labour governments in, you know, the last 100 years or so. And I think, what, you know, Labour is there, you know, obviously for, you know, working class and, you know, most people in the country. And when you look at this last election, when most people who are working class, they went to the Tories. Therefore, when the Labour is supposed to be a working class party, surely they should move with the majority of the country rather than with a few selectorate.
But isn't this a failure of the other three candidates, of Andy Burnham, Yvette Cooper and Liz Kendall, to be able to strike a chord with any core voters? Because anybody, they could have excited a particularly more, I don't know, like, free market friendly section of the electorate that then could have joined the party en masse and voted for somebody like Liz Kendall.
I know a lot of people who have voted, and they've joined for Yvette, they've joined for...
But they're much fewer than voted for.
Yes, they're much fewer, but then you've only got to look at the rise in sort of, you know, left-wing parties across Europe and, you know, Bernie Sanders in the US and things that, you know, which...
Hashtag feel the burn.
which has arisen from, you know, the financial crisis and people, you know, obviously not trusting the system of government.
But this is a failure of the other three candidates more than anything, because they're playing. So I listen to especially Yvette talk about things, and she just dances around an issue and doesn't commit to an actual stance. Fair enough, Liz Kendall is particularly robust on her opinions of things and is very unapologetic for that.
She's very robust and very unpopular simultaneously.
No, which I completely appreciate. But somebody like Andy Burnham and Yvette Cooper just seem to want to say anything to be able to appeal to as many people as possible and not offend anyone. Well, whereas Jeremy Corbyn...
I think that's politics in general, to be quite honest.
So Jeremy Corbyn is seen as an antidote to that. Isn't that a good thing, that maybe not for you in 2020, but maybe in order to kick all of the bullshit out of politics? Don't you think that there's going to be an opportunity to do that with someone like Corbyn?
No, I don't, because the fact remains, Jazza, yes, we're getting on the first terms now. That's right.
I feel like I'm being told off. This is lovely. You're
Oh, dear. Right, so how I... my opinions on this essentially is that if we want to help out people in this country, Labour has got to come into power in 2020. We've got to win back, you know, I believe 4 out of 5 of the votes which the party needs to win back come from Tory voters. Mm-hmm. And therefore, by labelling, for instance, Liz Kendall and having all these negative connotations, oh, she's Tory-like, that disgusting, then so you try to say that most of the country is disgusting. And it's not that. The fact is that the last election, people have looked at the lesser evils as such. And obviously, Labour didn't defend their record in government when, you know, they actually did a hell of a lot of good in government, you know. And as much as Tony Blair is now seen as this horrible, disgusting figure, mm-hmm. you know, 1997 to 2010, a lot of things, you know, were good. You know, you had the minimum wage, you had, you know, a lot of equality issues, you had peace in Northern Ireland, you know, you had Kosovo and Sierra Leone. And a lot of good things happened that, yeah, therefore, you know, you've got to look at things like that and actually getting back into government, because in opposition, there's not much that you can achieve. And the only thing that by electing Jeremy Corbyn as leader, the country's not going to vote for him as Prime Minister, because the country's not this far left sort of, which a lot of his supporters think is going to happen.
You know what, I think he might actually end up doing a lot better than people are saying at the moment, because people are craving that kind of authenticity, don't you?
I'd also say that Kendall would... Say Kendall had been elected, the odds on now is that she'd go up against George Osborne, who has just... The perception is that
he was on Andrew Marr this morning and looked very prime ministerial. Swooned.
There's that, but also he's just seen the country through an economic recession. And I think some of his policies have actually probably damaged the economy more than they've helped.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But that will not be the perception of the average voter. The average voter will say the economy's got stronger, George Osborne was at the controls. If you're running on credible economically, the front bench of the Tories are not like crazy fucking Nazis in terms of social policies either.
No, but they are dicks.
They are dicks, but there's not this chasm of difference between like a Kendall type figure and the front bench of the Tory party. So if I'm a Tory Labour swing voter, why would I not just go with the Tories at election time against Kendall, who's untested?
I would love for us to talk about this more, but we've run out of time on this topic.
Let him answer that.
Okay, fine. Go on.
Right,
then,
I'd prefer you to have a heart, in all fairness. Little dig at every single Tory voter there. I do apologise.
We know the Lib Dems tried the go with your head and heart thing, and
yeah,
it didn't work.
But I think what you've got to look at is that the Tories are potentially going to split over Europe. There's not going to be a lot of divide in their party. They've already got a majority of, you know, 10, 12, is it?
11,
12. And there's a lot of things which could cause quite a big rift within the party, such as, for instance, you know, the markets the other week, they all trembled from China. And there's a big risk that this, you know, I suppose, climb, which this accord in economic climb, is going to come to an end, and that the Tories, and they can no longer start blaming the last Labour government for a lot of the situations which are going to arise. So I think there's definitely a precedent for which Labour could win the next election. It's going to be a lot harder with the boundary changes, which is another issue which we discussed last week about the House of Lords, and I think that Liz Kendall is the candidate who scares the Tories the most, and who believes in the common good, which I also believe in.
That's a meaningless phrase.
Yeah, you are meaning. You do sound like a big politician.
And
it sounds as though all you're waiting for is for the shit to hit the fan economically. That's your only chance of getting back into government.
No, and not necessarily. Ooh. No, I want Labour to actually defend.
That smarted even from over here, Jimmy.
I want Labour to be able to defend their record in government and build the trust on the people and actually get some viable economic policies, because that's, you know, obviously the last election the party wasn't trusted because it didn't defend its record. So I think for the next 5 years, if we actually pick a candidate who can win back a lot of these voters, who can, you know, win in places where we've never won seats before, then I think that Liz Kendall is the best choice, and she's a fresh start for the party. So yeah.
Hashtag fresh start. Not going to happen though. So our logo is two swords sparring. And I don't think I've ever felt like this is actually a spar for at least a very long time. And thank you very much for humouring us. We've had a lot of fun.
And thank you for annoying me.
Thanks for not hitting me.
I came close.
we are lucky enough to have... What's your actual title at Freedom to Donate?
So I'm the head of media and PR.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know. So we're very lucky to have the head of media and PR of the Freedom to Donate campaign with us in the form of Lewis Burker. And congratulations, such a flashy title, by the way. It's very good. Can you explain to me really briefly what Freedom to Donate is and why we should care about it?
So Freedom to Donate is a positive and inclusive campaign to make the nation's blood supply safer, but more importantly, more inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And because there's been a lot of, in previous years, there's been, you know, bans which have been uplifted and there's been reviews. And at the moment, I think there's a lot more which can be done to open it up, to make it more safe. And
mm-hmm.
Predominantly, for instance, there's a ruling which states that men who have sex with men cannot give blood unless they've abstained from sex for 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the major focuses of the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also, you know, a lot of, for instance, people who've ever injected drugs, whether that be 10, 20 years ago, they still can't give blood. So we're hoping to raise awareness and change policy.
So I know you have to be careful in terms of how you describe stuff because of the fact that you're like in a very serious, you're trying to get support from lots of different groups and stuff, which is very understandable.
We don't have to be careful.
Is this like I'm gonna be basically men who have sex with men are not allowed to give blood for 12 months after having sex. No, but then also this has been seen as discrimination by a lot of groups, and as not based.
It is by definition discrimination. That's not really a disputable.
But Lewis isn't allowed to say that.
Sorry, Lewis doesn't think it's discrimination. But
yeah,
I do.
Oh, thanks. Oh, we've got an ally. Yeah. Excellent. So we actually talked about this in our first ever segment in our first ever podcast.
Lewis is pulling a face like I'm very much about to lose my job over
this. where I cited this, the inability of men who have sex with men to donate blood, as one of the next things on the list in terms of equality for LGBT folks. Is this on your radar, Jimmy, at all, apart from when I
only because of you,
persist
really.
You?
I mean, if someone had told me this is a law, I would have been baffled that it was the case, but it doesn't massively surprise me given like Section 28
mm-hmm.
and, you know, the other stuff. But it seems a pretty... I mean, it's all screened at the end of the day. Like they.
But there's a window period at which certain blood-borne viruses cannot be detected, but they can be passed on. So
can you like describe what it is that is stopping us from having this restriction being lifted?
So basically the issue which remains is back in 2011 an advisory government committee called the Advisory Committee on Blood Tissues and Organs, they submitted a report to the Department of Health which then ended the lifetime ban on men who have sex with men from donating blood, and it obviously then came to a 12-month deferral period,
which is now something actually that the US has transferred to very recently as well, right?
Believe so. I should know this. Actually,
they have. You're welcome.
Yes, it's
yeah, no, they definitely have.
Yeah. Right then. Well, if that's the case, so yes. And back in 2011, that was the complete, you know, right decision to make because you know that the medical capabilities back then and the testing that, you know, the safe way which we could do with this was for this 12-month deferral period. However, since then, you know, we're, you know, about 5 years later and things and.
So what has changed now? Why should we be reviewing it at the moment?
So there's been a higher rate. There's a prevention methods. So there's things like PrEP, which
is a medication that you can go on,
yes.
Which lowers your chances of contracting HIV.
So if you have had unprotected sex with a man and within, I believe it's
48 hours,
possibly to 72 hours. If people, you know, listening to the podcast, I might
for
not be
Christ's
right.
For Christ's sake, Wikipedia.
So yes, Wikipedia it. And that stops people, if they've put themselves at risk from, you know, I think it's like a 30-day course of pills and it can, you know, stop you hopefully from getting HIV. There's been a lot of prevention investment. There's been, you know, immunisations. For instance, I've just recently, I need to go for my third jab so that I won't get hepatitis.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, that's like a mandatory thing now when gay men go to a sexual health clinic that, you know, they get immunised.
You get recommended it.
Yes, you get recommended that. And, you know, most people do take them up on that.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the big issues as well with that, because that can go undetected in blood for, you know, quite a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also been, you know, a greater rise in terms of our testing capabilities. So now that's why we're coming for a review to look at the recent advances and hopefully to end this 12-month deferral mm-hmm. period.
So the thing is, men who have sex with men are still more likely to be to have sexually transmitted diseases that are carried in blood and to have to be HIV positive. And which can be can still be undetectable. Yes. Isn't it just safer for us to stop people from the men who have sex with men group and also the other groups that you're campaigning on behalf of, the sex workers and intravenous drug users? Isn't it just safer? It's better for us to have a blanket ban that makes sure that nobody is going to be infected with these diseases through transmission of blood by accident.
Well, if you wanted that certainty, I mean, you know, you're never going to have a 100% scenario where the blood supply is 100% safe, because it's just not going to happen. You know, maybe when testing capabilities come and you can test something straight away, possibly. But even with the, you know, with the case where, you know, straight men and women, they can donate, obviously, you know, you don't know if they've got a certain blood borne virus which isn't detected, so you can never be 100% sure. But what you've got to make sure is that you're working towards something being safe, and but more importantly, we've seen a 40% drop in blood donations, and we, you know, every single year we're coming closer and closer to the blood supply running out. So the time now, we need to act, we need to make it so it's more inclusive, but most importantly,
but
more
safe. We are a very small us as gay men are a very small proportion of the population.
That's actually not true if you believe the recent survey about young people's attitudes to like homosexuality, heterosexuality, bisexuality.
Tell me about it.
So there was a survey, you'll have to correct me on the details if I get it wrong, but a survey of like 18 to 24 year olds, and half of them identify as non-heterosexual, is that correct?
That's very exciting.
Was it half? I just pulled that figure out of my ass.
It's possibly just over half. I remember reading it at some point, maybe last week or something. I briefly skimmed over.
Actually, the chances of young people now being classed as man who has sex with man is going to be much higher than it was in the past.
Definitely.
So I saw the kind of like reporting that the blood and tissues board, I can't remember what their actual name is, that they said, and they concluded that they wouldn't trust individuals to be able to assess their own levels of risk. Don't you think that that's a legitimate thing to do? So let them decide what groups are more at risk of having these diseases, rather than somebody saying, "Oh yeah, I'm overtly sexually active."
Yes, but you see, the thing is that obviously this is a deeply complex issue, and you know, people.
So we're not going to fully cover it in this 15-minute podcast, because we might as well stop now.
Quite possibly, though. What I'll finish on essentially with saying, so I don't take up the entire podcast on men who have sex with men giving blood, but we need to make sure that primarily that the blood supply is safe, and secondly that we increase the blood supply, because you know, blood saves lives, and we're coming increasingly near every single year, as I've just said, to running out of blood. And you know, if we run out of blood, people die, and you know, it's a serious issue. Therefore, making it, you know, more inclusive and sort of not relaxing the guidelines, but making the guidelines more up to date with modern medical capabilities is the logical way forward for this, because that way it's safe, you're being inclusive, you're getting more blood, and you know, everybody's happy.
So
right now, do you support the thing that is not a ban, then?
That is not a ban. Oh dear.
Well, you obviously think that it should be reviewed, right?
Yes, I think it should be reviewed. I don't think it's discriminatory. I think essentially that it needs to be reviewed, because we've moved forwards in our capabilities, and things need to be reviewed from time to time. Things change, as they always do. Therefore, that's why, you know, we're calling for a review to update it with our modern sciences.
So obviously, for me and Lewis, this is particularly high in terms of like our awareness of it, because it directly affects us and directly stops us, as long as we're still having sex, right?
Yeah.
From giving blood.
I have a question though. Is there anything from stopping a sexually active gay man from walking to a clinic
and lying?
Pretending.
Yeah. No, there's nothing.
Nothing whatsoever.
So I mean, this isn't exactly like a bulletproof.
That's why I said earlier on that, you know, you can never be 100% sure. So.
But I wanted to ask, in terms of like a straight man who isn't affected by this ban and who could have as much unprotected sex as he likes and still be able to give blood, what, like, would you feel invested in this enough to kind of lobby an MP, or do you think it's a bit of a non-issue? Do you think that it's something that we should just kind of get over?
Well, I mean, I'm going to have to be very careful about these words.
I agree.
But the inclusion thing, I mean, I see why you want to give blood, but I don't think it's like it's anywhere near as big a deal as the gay marriage thing.
Yeah, from
my point of view. But the blood supply thing, I think, is an excellent point. I mean, I think you should be allowed to do it. Whether I'd lobby
it's in very it, generous of you.
I know, I'm very magnanimous. but whether it's worth lobbying, I guess that depends on your priorities. You know, and we're not a lobbying group. We just chat shit about politics.
So. Okay, so Jimmy asked me this the last time we talked about particularly gay issues. Mm. If we are able to completely reassess this and stop this in air quotes ban, what do you think would be the next thing on the agenda of LGBTQ plus rights in the UK?
Oh gosh. I think generally just making society more inclusive. For instance, if I believe you had a case of this maybe a few months ago where you was walking down the street with your boyfriend and
street harassment was loads of fun.
Yeah. So I think just in general that, you know, things like pride events and stuff, you know, they help raise more awareness and make society more acceptable. And I think that, you know, and there's still a lot of methods where we need to go and improve on trans issues, which is obviously taking quite a leading light in, you know, today's society with big figures like Caitlyn Jenner and Laverne Cox. So I think that from the top of my head, there's probably going to be something that's going to come to me after this.
Do you want
to
ask me? Ask me.
Yes, Jess, what do you think is the next thing?
Queer sex ed in schools compulsory.
Yes.
There we go. So that's what's going to happen next.
But you see, Tristram Hunt had the, hopefully, if Labour got into government, that was hopefully going to be an education policy, but sadly, Labour didn't win the election.
You had to turn this into a Labour thing, didn't you?
Yes, but you see, that was, you know,
I'm going to cut this short now.
That was a major policy.
No,
and
no,
it,
no, no.
Jazza here again. Hello. I hope that you enjoyed that slightly shorter podcast this week. Again, if you did enjoy it and you do enjoy listening to us, like, chat crap every week, then please do leave us a review on the iTunes store. It helps us out to no end, honestly. Just take 5 minutes out of your day to do it. That would be great. And leave us 5 stars as well, however many stars that you want, really. And you can find me at Jazza John. You can find Jimmy at JDE Nichols on the Twitters. And we look forward to engaging with you on social platforms across the internet. If you were particularly interested by the Freedom to Donate campaign that we talked about with Lewis, I uploaded a video at Rhyming with Oranges, shameless plug, but you can go to youtube.com/rhymingwithoranges and see that video there now, I suppose. So thank you very much again. We'll listen and we'll talk to you next week.